Well, thank you, David, for your welcome today, and thank you for the opportunity and the privilege of sharing with you here at St. Alfred's. I do feel amongst friends. It's a relationship that's been built over many years now, and it's good to be able to feel as though this is sort of my second home. 2 years ago it was that I last spoke to this congregation, and I remember it well. We were in a school just down the road. There was talk of a new building that was about to commence. And so to be here today in this beautiful building is a real joy. I don't know the whole story, but I know enough of the story to know that this place represents a lot of faith and a lot of faithfulness in terms of God's people, a lot of sacrifice. So well done. Congratulations on this beautiful place. And I know that buildings are not everything. They simply represent part of the vision that you have for this church that God has given you. But it is wonderful to be able to stand here and to share in such a beautiful building. Now, of course, a lot else has changed over the last 2 years. Alan DeMond from New Hope Baptist Church has become a doctor. Did you know that? Got his doctorate. He is now to be referred to as the Reverend Doctor Alan DeMond. And Peter McPherson has become an archdeacon. Did you know that? And Peter is now to be referred to as the Venerable Reverend Peter McPherson. I'm impressed. And I have become a grandfather. And I am to be referred to as Grandpa, okay? Two little granddaughters born in the last 18 months and one on the way. So I am off and running. It's quite incredible. Despite my age, however, I still ride a bike. That's my passion in terms of keeping fit. And most Saturday mornings you can see me with some friends riding the bike tracks and the roads of Melbourne. I have suggested and in fact encouraged Alan DeMond and Peter McPherson to join me. Can you picture the three of us in Lycra? Can you? It's not a pretty thought, is it? But I will keep trying and promise a photograph if ever I succeed. I'd like to bring some words from the New Testament. They're familiar words. And just listen as I read. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through Him all things were made. Without Him nothing was made that has been made. In Him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. Yet to all who received Him, to those who believed in His name, He gave the right to become children of God, children born of not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made His dwelling among us. We have seen His glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father full of grace and truth. And when Jesus spoke again to the people, He said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. Well, that's the sermon. I probably should sit down right at this point, because those words of Scripture say it all. Jesus Christ, the one who was in the beginning, the source of life, The one who came into the world as light to dispel darkness once and for all. Jesus Christ, the one in whom is found eternal life, and the one who is able to make us the light of the world. But I'm a preacher, so I'm going to preach anyway. It seems to me that the Apostle Paul, when he wrote his letter to the Philippian church, had all of this in mind. He wanted to impress upon the hearts and minds of these believers that as followers of Jesus, they were followers of the light, and they themselves were people of the light, and they needed to live as people of the light. And so in the reading that was read to us just there from verse 14, do everything without complaining or arguing so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God, without fault in a crooked and depraved generation, in which you shine like stars in the universe as you hold out the word of life. Here is Paul contrasting a dark, depraved world with the light of Christ, represented in the lives of the Philippian Christians. A number of years ago, I was standing with a group of people in a large cavern in one of the Jenolan caves. And we'd walked quite a way to get down to this cavern. It was a long way under the ground. And the guide told us to grab hold of a railing because he was going to turn out the lights and show us what real darkness is like. That's what he did. And it was dark. I sort of learnt what pitch black actually is all about. You couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And after he turned the lights back on, which wasn't as quick as I would have liked him to do it, he explained to us that it wouldn't matter how long we were in that cave in the darkness, we would never adjust to it. He explained that where there is a total absence of light, darkness is enduring and all-pervasive. And 1 hour after we'd been there, it would have been as dark as the moment the lights went out. A frightening thought. Darkness and light are opposites, as opposite as two concepts could possibly be. And Paul paints this picture of Christians being stars that shine light into the bleakness of a crooked, depraved, dark world. And in doing so, he highlights the difference that Jesus makes in our world and in our lives. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8, Paul picks up a similar theme and writes, "For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light." Now I want you to notice that Paul does not say here, you were once in darkness, but now you are in light. He tells them that they were darkness. In other words, their former state of being was one of darkness. They were ignorant, they were in error, but now you are light in the Lord. In other words, as they came into a relationship with Jesus Christ, they became, by nature, light. Their very essence had been transformed from darkness to light through their relationship with Christ. And the same is true for us as Christians. As we enter into a relationship with God through our faith in Jesus Christ, we move from darkness into light. And the essence of our very being is transformed from an essence of darkness into an essence of light. Now that should make us feel special. But you might say to me, David, why is it that I don't always feel special? In fact, why is it that sometimes I'm a little bit more comfortable in the dark than I am in the light? By the way, that's my experience at various points. Well, look what Paul is saying. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light. In other words, there is a choice to be made in terms of how we live. As followers of Jesus, we still must decide whether or not we will live as children of light. Ultimately, how we live is a choice. And despite the fact that you are born again, that you have been set free, that you have been brought into the light, it is a daily choice as to whether you will live as a child of the light. And this is the theme that Paul picks up in our Bible reading today. Philippians 2, back to the beginning of the reading, verse 12. Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. Here is Paul encouraging these Christians to continue to be obedient to the call that God has placed on their life, the call of the gospel. Now, we do need to be careful in how we understand exactly what Paul is saying here when he talks about continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Paul is not suggesting here that our salvation is something to be earned or worked for. No. Our salvation, remember, is a gift. It's a gift of God. It's an act of God's grace that we are saved, not by works, lest any man should boast. However, having been saved, Paul tells us that our salvation needs to be worked out in daily living. It needs to be expressed. We need to continually translate into action the principles of the gospel and the principles of our salvation. And so I ask you the question today, and believe me, I ask myself the same question. Are you living as a person of the light? Are you representing your Saviour, Jesus Christ, the light of the world? Are you representing him well in your world? And it's a sequence of decisions that you make every day. Decisions about how you will act, how you will speak, how you will live. As a person of the light or as a person in darkness. And so Paul continues in verse 14. Do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a crooked and depraved generation. It's really important to note here that Paul is writing not to individual Christians, but to a community of faith. This is a church. This working out of our salvation in daily living is actually a challenge to the people of God, corporately, not just to people individually. And therefore, it is a challenge to our relationship with other people in our church. As the Church of Jesus Christ, we are the children of God. That term children is being used here. And as such, we are to do everything without complaining or arguing. He's not talking about arguing with people outside the church. He's talking about people within the church, getting on, overlooking each other's faults, accepting the differences, being unified in faith. And if we are going to shine in the darkness, Paul is suggesting that this Christ-like quality of displaying light has to be done in the context of relationship with one another. Now, I don't know your church well enough to know whether this is the perfect church or not. But let me tell you, in my church, there are some people I have some difficulty with. Don't always see eye to eye. Personality problems they've got. It was a saying that I saw years ago that rings true. To dwell above with the saints I love, that will be wonder and glory. To dwell below with the saints I know, well, that's another story. It's not easy to be in relationship with each other. The moment you join the church, it's no longer perfect, of course. That's the truth. But this is the call. This is what Paul is encouraging us to do. Do everything without complaining or arguing. Why? So that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a crooked and depraved generation in which you shine like stars in the universe as you hold out the word of life. It's a beautiful picture. The church of Jesus Christ together living lives of obedience and honour to God, living in harmony with one another and bringing light into a dark and depraved world as we hold out the word of life. Now, I like to think, because it's true, that Come Celebrate is a classic example of this. The Church of Jesus Christ working together to hold out the word of life. Isn't that a beautiful picture? You know, it's hard enough getting along with the people in your own church, let alone having to do it with people of other congregations. That's a challenge. You know, Peter and Alan and I have often reflected on the fact it'd be so much easier if maybe we just rotated, you know. We'll do it one year, you do it the next, and the Baptists can do it the third. It would be easier at one level, but it wouldn't be right. Because together, we've got to work together. We've got to work out our differences. We've got to overlook the foibles that annoy each other. And in the name of Christ, we together hold out the word of life. It's a powerful thing. What did Jesus say? By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. It's a powerful witness. And that's what we need to pray for in relation to Come Celebrate. But there is a problem, however, when we're talking about being stars in the universe, lighting up the darkness. And the problem is that we don't have any natural inner light of our own. I've recently been painting our spare room. We've only just recently received a spare room because our two daughters have got married and they've moved out of the house for the first time. We've got a spare room. And I was instructed that I should paint the spare room. Any other husbands receive that sort of instruction? I hate painting. I hate it. And the job got even worse when I was reminded that our girls at some past time when they were young had stuck little stars all over the ceiling. Hundreds of them. How they did this, I have no idea. But I do remember when they had done this, the joy it brought them to turn out the light and the ceiling would glow like a universe, like stars in the universe, for a couple of minutes. And then you know what happens to glow-in-the-dark things, don't you? They fade. And then they disappear. So they have to get up and turn the light on and recharge the stars and then so on. You know, the problem with us shining like stars in the universe is that we don't have any natural light of our own. And so what we need to do is to take on the light of Jesus, which we reflect. And the only way you reflect the light of Jesus is to spend time in his presence. Get the picture? And having spent time with Jesus, you're able to go out and reflect the light of Jesus. And look, I know theologically you could poke holes in that sort of analogy, but I'm pretty simple and I like simple thoughts. And I know in my own life, the times where I don't spend time with Jesus, my little light starts to dim. And if I'm trying to do it on my own, then I have very little impact. And so whatever it means for you, day by day, you need to bask in the light of the Saviour. And that needs to be put together with basking in his word. And that will give you the capacity to go out and reflect the light of Jesus into your world. There's a beautiful verse in 2 Corinthians, and I don't have this up on the PowerPoint, but 2 Corinthians 3, 18. And we who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory. Beautiful picture. Are being transformed into his likeness with ever increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. And so together we need to shine like stars in the universe as we hold out the word of life. That's our call. That's our purpose. As the Church of Jesus Christ in this area, that is what we are about. And I've been around churches long enough to know, by the way, that we're good at talking about this and not always so good about putting it into practice. We've got to get out there and shine our lights. I want to close today by reading you a story. It's a story by the author Max Licardo from his book God Came Near. A few nights ago, a peculiar thing happened. A storm caused a blackout in our neighbourhood. And when the lights went out, I felt my way through the darkness into the storage closet where we keep the candles for nights like this. And through the glow of a lit match, I looked up on the shelf where the candles were stored. And there they were, already positioned in their stands. I took my match and lit four of them. How they illuminated the storage cupboard. What had been a veil of blackness suddenly radiated with soft golden light. How great to have light, I said out loud, and then spoke to the candles. If you do such a good job here in the storage closet, just wait till I get you out where you are really needed. I'll put one of you on the table so we can eat. I'll put one of you on my desk so I can read. I'll give one of you to my wife so she can cross-stitch. And I'll set you, and I took down the largest one, in the living room where you can light up the whole area. I felt a bit foolish talking to candles, but what do you do when the lights go out? I was turning to leave with the large candle in my hand when I heard a voice. Now hold it right there. I stopped. Somebody's in here, I thought. And then relaxed. It's just my wife teasing me for talking to the candles. Okay, honey, cut the kidding, I said in the semi-darkness. No answer. Maybe it was the wind. I took another step. Hold it, I said. There was the voice again. My hands began to sweat. Who said that? I did. The voice was near my hand. Who are you? What are you? I'm a candle. I looked at the candle I was holding. It was burning a strong golden flame. It was red and sat on a heavy wooden candle holder that had a firm handle. I looked around once more to see if the voice could be coming from another source. There's no one here but you, me, and the rest of us candles, the voice informed me. I lifted up the candle to take a closer look. You won't believe what I saw. There was a tiny face in the wax. I told you wouldn't believe me. Not just a wax face that someone had carved, but a moving, functioning, flesh-like face full of expression and life. Don't take me out of here. What? I said, don't take me out of this room. What do you mean? I have to take you out. You're a candle. Your job is to give light. It's dark out there. People are stubbing their toes and walking into walls. You have to come out and light up the place. But you can't take me out. I'm not ready, the candle explained with pleading eyes. I need more preparation. I couldn't believe my ears. More preparation? Yeah, I've decided I need to research this job of light giving so I won't go out and make a bunch of mistakes. You'd be surprised how distorted the glow of an untrained candle can be. So I'm doing some study. I just finished a book on wind resistance. I'm in the middle of a great series of tapes on wick build-up and conservation. And I'm reading the new bestseller on flame display. Have you heard of it? No, I answered. You might like it. It's called Waxing Eloquently. That really sounds interesting. I caught myself. What am I doing? I'm in here conversing with a candle while my wife and daughters are out there in the darkness. All right then, I said, you're not the only candle on the shelf, I'll blow you out and take the others. But just as I got my cheeks full of air, I heard other voices. We aren't going either. It was a conspiracy. I turned around and looked at the three other candles, each with flames dancing above a miniature face. I was beyond feeling awkward about talking to candles. I was getting miffed. You are candles and your job is to light dark places. Well, that may be what you think, said the candle on the far left, a long, thin fellow with a goatee. You may think we have to go, but I'm busy.
Busy?
Yes, I'm meditating.
What?
A candle that meditates? Yes, I'm meditating on the importance of light. It's really enlightening. I decided to reason with them. Listen, I appreciate that what you guys are doing. I'm all for meditation time, and everyone needs to study and research. But for goodness sake, you guys have been in here for weeks. Haven't you had enough time to get your wick on straight? And you other two, I ask, are you going to stay here as well? A short, fat, purple candle with plump cheeks that reminded me of Santa Claus spoke up. I'm waiting to get my life together. I'm not stable enough. I lose my temper easily. I guess you could say that I'm a hothead. And the last candle had a female voice, very pleasant to the ear. I'd like to help, she explained, but lighting the darkness is not my gift. All this was sounding too familiar.
Not your gift? What do you mean?
Well, I'm a singer. I sing to other candles to encourage them to burn more brightly. Without asking my permission, she began a rendition of This Little Light of Mine. I have to admit she had a good voice. And the other three joined in, filling the storage room with singing. Hey, I shouted above the music. I don't mind if you sing while you work. In fact, we could do with a little bit of music out there. They didn't hear me. They were singing too loudly. I yelled louder, come on, you guys. There's plenty of time for this later. We've got a crisis on our hands. They wouldn't stop. I put the big candle on the shelf and took a step back and considered the absurdity of it all. Four perfectly healthy candles singing to each other about light, but refusing to come out of the closet. I had all I could take. One by one, I blew them out. They kept singing to the end. The last one to flicker was the female. I snuffed her out right on the puff part of Won't Let Satan Puff Me Out. And I stuck my hands in my pockets and walked back out in the darkness. I bumped my knee on the freezer. Then I bumped into my wife. Where are the candles? She asked. They won't work. Where did you buy those candles anyway? Oh, they're church candles. Remember the church that closed down across town? I bought them there. I understood.